This is a digital recording of the Senate's Executive Committee of April 23rd, 2015.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was at jury duty.
Oh, getting over. Just, like,
I live in the same, like, hoping I'll have a cough in my pool.
We're probably all the same.
No. Okay, folks, we do have a forum, and we've got a fairly packed agenda for today, as well as probably for Senate and Elect.com and Mile 7. We're adding a few time certains. So we're going to have the direct entry master's in nursing discontinuance. That's business item number 2, is at 3:15. We'll be having 3:45 the human development program revision, and we'll be having at 4 o'clock is the FSAC report. Although I don't see Ed Bebo here, so he's coming. Then okay, so he'll be in here because Richard Lucas cannot make it, and. We have a 4:15 for the early childhood education certificate, and somewhere in there, we're going to try and shoehorn the reassigned time for Senate for next year. Maybe we can try and do that at the beginning. Are there any other time certain requests or any other changes to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, then we will adopt that as it goes. I don't know how many of you got a chance to look at the minutes that were circulated by email. I sent some text-washing comments to Laurel already, but does anybody have anything else to add or change whatever to our minutes? Okay, seeing no requests for changing on that. Past that. In terms of reports, well, I think a lot of the stuff is coming through in the businesses here. We did, the Council of Academic Senators did actually send off a letter to the chancellors, the CSU and the community college system about all that community college stuff that finally got put there. Everybody's name got on it. Our convener got to have to do the John Hancock thing of his name in the middle of the lobby, so he could be able to hunt it down. But basically, it was a unanimous decision that the process was far too short, and then what that sent to Harris did not reflect the full faculty input, but did thank the Chancellor White for giving us more than 48 hours and getting the process that was in there, but at least got some consultation out there. Other things coming in. This will be the first of many reminders that Commencement Day is the 16th. This is a normal day of work for us faculty, and we strongly encourage all of you to be there, at least for your schools, but why not for both? You don't have to answer that. That was rhetorical. we really do want to do that, and we'll be trying to send that out. I've already heard from a few junior faculty members. They're a little bit shy about doing it, or maybe they don't have regalia. If you know somebody who's retired and might have regalia hanging in the closet, and maybe you can help them marry some of these folks together. I don't think everybody's going to be looking to see if it's exactly the right school. But it really would be nice. I know that many times some of the students have really, it's made a difference for them and their families when they got to say, oh, here's my teacher, whatever. And so you'll be hearing more. I think if there's too much more from my side. I think that's it for now. Oh, okay, yeah. So while I'm doing it then, I will mention this now. So at Structure and Functions, we were looking at the restructuring issues with the art, as everybody knows, splitting the baby, and probably going to kill each other off, right? It didn't, because we were expecting to do more based on some input from the Senate, but we didn't get there. But we did spend some time talking about FSAC's response to defining the faculty, and we need some more input. Richard wasn't able to join us that day, so we're going to be following up on that. That'll end up becoming part of some of the Senate restructuring topic, possibly for part of next year, because it's a little bit more complicated. We did get input from the SSP representative that there is some reservation about taking away that voice, that voting voice on the Senate, potentially. And so that's something that we wanted to explore a little bit more.
the logic was starting to get clearer. Okay, the teaching SSPs that we, oops, that sounds like Deborah's joining us. Okay, all right, so.
There she is,
Deborah.
Our overlord.
Okay,
well, that's all we're doing.
1984. Okay. So,
we're looking up her
so there'll be more on that, but apart from that, most of you were reporting that we had an election, and Sakina Bryant was elected to serve as our lecture senator. So that's both the chair and the vice chair.
Richard, do you want to make sure Deborah can hear us?
Can you hear us?
I
can barely hear.
Yep.
Richard, I can barely hear.
All right, so we can keep this up. Okay, there we go.
All right.
So that's the chair's report. President Armenianna, do you have anything to report?
In terms of regalia, I had a conversation with the provost, and I think he's going to have some funding to help with some of the, especially the young and the newer faculty who do not have regalia, so they can rent them, etc.
That's nice. That was something they did the year I came. They covered the regalia.
Secondly, on the gates with the community college, there is going to be a phone call among the provost of the people who have either expressed opposition or concern about the automotive engineering program at Rio Hondo. I don't think there's that much argument on the automotive side, but there is a lot of concern on the other half of the degree, which is looking, smelling, and wobbling like a duck with some of our business programs. They would, the community college would also add another program because now they are moving forward with 14, including that one that it is in contention. And there'll be another one that unnamed player to be named. There is a general understanding that this is not the smoothest process ever, and that at the end the CSU does not have veto power, simply a consultative process. It is up to the community colleges to decide regardless of this. And I think that the contention is now over. 1 degree is clearly a no, and this one on automotive engineering, there needs to be a further discussion. But it's moving fast by the community college's calendar, not necessarily.
Okay, any questions for the president?
Actually, excuse me, could you turn this for?
Hi, Deborah.
So she can see
them. She's going to start getting ill. Be careful.
Okay. So any questions for President?
You mentioned at the last Senate meeting that some of the UCs were perhaps expressing that they might not acknowledge these degrees as qualifications for entry to their graduate programs. Is there any development on what the UC, whether we're going to follow suit or have that kind of discussion?
We don't know that. But there have been some expressions by some of their faculty councils that they don't see at this moment those degrees as valid for entry into their graduate program. By the way, on the political side, that is also the view by the Brown administration as another indication of the arrogance and behavior of the University of California.
Wow.
Just to show you
surprise
success. Once you peel the onion, there are
lots of tears.
More to it.
Yes. One thing I didn't do properly is I didn't indicate that Neil Markley is here for Larry, and I did mention Ed Beethoven. So that was the one other thing that Melinda, actually, that's not here. Melinda's here for Andrew because yesterday. Mm-hmm.
And I have to leave at 4 for an external reviewer meeting, also representing Andrew. So.
My head is spinning. So given that we have just a couple minutes before the next item, is there anything to report out of Academic Affairs?
No.
Nothing new. Any questions that we want to send back to Academic Affairs for Andrew? No. That was a nice quick one. So then let's go to our time certain for 3:15. It's close enough. And this is the Direct Entry Master's in Nursing discontinuance. So I will hand this over to Melinda Million and to Deborah.
Thank you, Richard. So first, I want to apologize for missing Senate last week. I had jury duty, so I missed both EPC, so I didn't get to hear the public hearing for nursing, and I missed Senate. The only interesting thing about it is that I live in San Francisco, and Leslie Wong, president of SF State, was in my jury pool with me. So that was about the only interesting thing about it. But anyway, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to be here. So you have in your packet a proposal for the discontinuance of the direct entry MS in nursing, and you have in front of you, it was emailed out earlier this afternoon, EPC's recommendation with regard to this proposed discontinuance. And so you can see that, as is indicated on the top, EPC voted against recommending the proposed discontinuance, and the vote was 0 in favor, 6 against, and 2 abstentions. And the first page of EPC's document summarizes the factors that were taken into consideration in making this decision, but generally, I think EPC's perspective on this proposed discontinuance is that it's clear that the nursing program was well regarded, that it was successful, and that the reason the discontinuance is being brought forward is due to inadequate resources, specifically too few tenure track hires. And the proposal itself for discontinuance is short and sweet compared to the last one, the last mammoth packet of documents you got to see for the Kendall discontinuance. So hopefully you got a chance to look at it. But I think you'll see that in the proposal itself, the nursing department makes very clear why the program can't continue. In fact, the program was suspended or put on hiatus earlier, and so in fact it's something that the nursing department has been struggling with, and since tenure track hires have not been forthcoming and it doesn't look like they're going to be, their accrediting agencies are essentially saying you need to pull the plug or we're going to do it for you. And so what I'm bringing to you is these documents for you to consider them for readiness for Senate, as well as to answer any questions you might have. And thank you, Deborah, for being here, because I know I'll need to rely on you for some of the details of the EPC discussion.
Can you hear, Deborah?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for allowing, well, here's Zoom. I am representing Sonoma State and Oakland at the WASC conference.
Oh, that's
right. Cool. Okay. So, WASC to learn down here, and Linda, I want to just clarify a point about our accreditation with the Board of Registered Nursing, and that is you either have a program or you don't have a program. You don't have a program in hiatus because then you go through the program self-study and the entire process of evaluation, even though you haven't had the program since 2011, there's no, I use the term mothballing, I know that's an old term, ship term, but, and I did ask our nursing education consultant Katie Doherty at the Board of Registered Nursing about mothballing, and she said no. So this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, in that we've had it on hiatus because we haven't had her visit, and now the visit is coming up a year from now.
Okay.
And so we either do a full program review on a program that we haven't had since 2011, mm-hmm. or we have to just continue it completely. And that's why Dr. Stauffer, our dean, made the comment on her report that this was essentially due to requirements of our accreditation from the BRN.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little background,
yeah. Thank you for that clarification. That helps. And also, I should say that you came to EPC in 2010 to give an update on what was going on with the program, and that you were going to have to hold off on admitting cohorts. And so we knew at that point that this was a tenuous situation.
Okay, so do we have any questions? I see... Kirsten's on our speakers list, and is there anybody else who wants to get on that? Okay, so Kirsten.
Slowly, very slowly.
Hey, Deborah, since I'm asking the question, I can now see both of you, so this is good. My question has, because this is about readiness and about mm-hmm. what we bring to the Senate, in the packet you discuss the accreditation issues, but I think it would be really helpful to have like a brief summary, either in verbally or written down, of in essence exactly what you consider the ramifications of not discontinuing. I mean, does it hurt all of your nursing programs if you don't? So in other words, it's one thing to say we're worried mm-hmm. about accreditation on this program, and we don't necessarily want to discontinue what was a popular program, mm-hmm. but I think also the other side of saying, but what are the consequences specifically, and how quickly will they happen? Mm-hmm. Right, to the nursing as a whole, not just this program. Does that question make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay.
I don't know if I can predict the future of the consequences, but...
you have a halo, according to this, so I think you can. I said, on our picture of you, you had a halo, so I thought you could predict. Right. Sorry, that was just my inappropriate, you know, I'm almost through the semester. Hopefully I can hold it together. You don't kick me out before then. Sorry.
So I do understand the question, and I'm happy to speak to that at Senate, and I will make sure that I cover that. And I'll just, I think what I'll do is I'll call Kate and ask her that question directly.
Because I think providing that context sort of before we start the discussion will be mm-hmm. helpful for people, because, you know, it's not a good situation mm-hmm. either way, but... We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
But I'm fairly certain I know what most of the consequences are, but let me get it directed from the horse's mouth so that I can quote her when I speak to the Senate. So that's a good question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so Melinda and then Ruben, were you second on this one? So do you have something to say?
So I think along those lines, Deborah, I think it would help to lay out, you know, very specifically at what point the last cohort was admitted, when they finished, what the current status of the program is in terms of students moving through it, because part of answering or addressing Kirsten's comment would be laying out, you know, the hypothetical of, well, right now there aren't cohorts being admitted, so what's the consequence for your program if the discontinuance is not approved and you continue to not admit cohorts, compared to, I mean, hypothetically, could you be required to admit cohorts and some set of circumstances would dictate that you would be forced to let them in to maintain some sort of accreditation? So I think if you sort of spell out the consequences, I think that will help people see where the program stands now, since it has been mothballed to some effect, even though I know that's not a real status. But practically, you can update them on what's happened with the student cohorts and then what the outcomes would be of not discontinuing and how that might play out in different ways versus discontinuing.
Ruben?
Does the nursing department has also another master's degree?
Yes, Ruben, thank you for asking. We have the family nurse practitioner program.
Yes, and one of the things that EPC noted in their in the recommendation is the reduction in both the bachelor's level programs and the master's level programs, that there's been an ongoing loss of programs in the nursing department. And so that was of concern, that this is a pattern, part of a pattern.
Can I?
So
Catherine
and then Kirsten.
Hi, Deborah, it's Catherine. If I'm reading this right, then you said you either have a program or you don't have a program. Is this discontinue? I understand the formal discontinuance process and why we're going through this, but is this really moot because you don't have a program, so you don't have it?
That's very good. We currently have a program on record. So we currently have a curriculum for the program.
Right.
We admitted a cohort in the last several years. So the question is, and I'll go back to what Melinda's saying and maybe what Christian's saying as well. So if we identified for fall that we were taking in a cohort, we therefore have the program. We just don't have the resources to do that.
So you are not going to advertise?
Correct.
So you haven't.
We have taken it, we put on our website that the direct entry master's program is in suspension.
Thank you.
Is that everybody around the table?
Right. Can I, I have another question, but I wanted to follow up on Catherine's. My interpretation of what you had said earlier was that while you may have a program in suspension, from your accrediting body's point of view, you still have a program. And therefore, it's that not having anybody in it doesn't mean, from their point of view, that you wouldn't have...
to do
apparently our right. connection is unstable. Is that correct? That part of the problem is you can't just stop admitting people because your accreditation agency
right.
will say you still have this program.
You need to take it
right.
off.
And therefore you have to do a self-study on a program based on when you admitted last, who you graduated last. And they're not going to just let me not admit indefinitely. So
right.
it's already been several years. They called me and said, essentially, Fisher Cup 8. I seem to be on a nautical thing here today. and so I said, all right, well, I don't have the resources. And so this is the beginning of the formal process for this particular program. And those around the table have helped me with this as well, please, is because it's a full major, so I not only we have to go through the California Board of Registered Nursing, we also have to contact and go to the Chancellor's Office if I got my data correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I understand. Mm-hmm. To actually ask the question I wanted to ask, and this is actually for everyone, so it's not something that you have to necessarily answer, but it kind of goes to the fact that we have the Kendall as well. It may be helpful when we have programs discontinued to actually have data on the full package of what the department is doing to help see it in context. So mm-hmm. I'm not putting that question on you, but more maybe we can be thinking about that because that then helps people see the full picture rather than looking at just this program versus, you know, 01. Anyway, that was it. So
I'm going to turn to Sam first and then go to Melinda Barnard.
Thank you. So I'm just curious why EPC had such a different reaction to this discontinuance rather than to the Candel one. I mean, a lot of what's written here seems to mirror what was said about the Candel discontinuance, that there's strong demand for its continuance, it provided value to the regional community, there's inadequate funding, inadequate resource. I mean, I guess I just don't see the difference, but your reaction was very different.
Yes, I think that there's a lot. I can see why they look similar on the surface, but I think the committee felt that the status of the programs were a little bit different. That I think with the nursing program, there's such a dire need in that specific field that I think with the Candel program, there was a regional interest in it, but I don't think the disservice to the immediate community and to the larger population was felt to be as significant with the Candel program, because Candel continues to exist at UC Davis. I mean, the program is there, students can be admitted, it just happens to be less convenient for students in our immediate service area. That's a simplification. But I think that because of the specific area here, and because it also represents an ongoing reduction in the programs available at the MA level in nursing, that there was a different concern. Also, I think with the Candel program, there was division among the Candel faculty as to whether the program should be continued, how did it fit into the long-term goals of the School of Education, and EPC didn't see any of that here. This was an in-demand, successful, well-regarded program that, you know, the only issue is a funding issue. So they're a little bit different in that sense, but I think it is the same themes coming up.
Melinda Milligan, and then we're getting close to the end of this period, so Melinda Barnett. So we should be thinking about if we feel like this is ready, maybe with that, the additional things, just those few items that you already mentioned. So Melinda?
Yeah, Deborah, I just think it's important, given EPC's vote not to discontinue, that you, as chair of nursing, would need to provide some information back to the Senate before they make their decision. When you put it on hiatus, you had 9 tenure track. You're now down to 5. The Senate voting not to discontinue, the implications of that for the Department of Nursing, let's say you get another tenure track hire, I'm not sure the Senate understands all the various demands that are on you as a department. And the expectation that somehow with one new tenure track hire, this could come back. I also think, and you mentioned in here, and I'm aware from the conversations I've had with you, it's not just the hire. There are other resources that this program demands. So you're going to need to walk a line factually to give the Senate to look at this, not discontinuing this and getting a tenure track hire, let's say, hypothetically, doesn't necessarily mean Department of Nursing can actually offer this program. And so I think you're going to need to explain sort of the balance of that.
Okay, so we've come to the end of the 15 minutes. Is there anything major we need before we decide whether this is ready to go forward for next week? All right, then.
Well, that's what I was just saying. It needs Deborah's response to the non-vote of discontinuation.
That's a previous comment, too.
Yeah,
I thought she's got that, right?
Yeah. So with that addressed.
But do you think that needs to be in the packet going forward?
Yeah, I do. I think they'll save you guys time.
So Melinda's asking for a written statement of that response, then, not just a statement, or suggesting that, not just a statement at the opening.
Okay, yeah.
Did you get that, Deborah?
So this is from the chair, a written statement. Let me just recap, if I may. The implications of not discontinuing the program based on all the different things that a program needs, and then what we would be able to provide, and more importantly, what we would not be able to provide. That sounds like I've captured that correctly?
Sounds like it to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we move this forward? I think we do. We have to put it on the agenda. All right. So we have a move. Second.
Second.
All right. Any opposed? Then let's go with it. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us remotely.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll miss you.
I'll find it lost.
Laura, what software? Was that Skype?
No.
Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
It's better than Skype.
Hope she's not still on it, because otherwise it's going to be like a roller
coaster. Just to turn around, twirl her.
Melinda, is anyone if you don't connect with her, can you help me choose?
This is what we're referring to.
That implication thing is the fact that they get into the next item.
So we have 3:15, it's 3:30. So let's move to the reassigned time issue. So you'll see it's the first page of the packet. This is the annual request that goes forward asking for the release time for faculty governance. And it's the same request that we've made in past years. And as we get started, though, I know that Kirsten wanted to mention one thing, so we'll start with that and then open it up for further discussion.
Right, so you'll note that we have again asked for two course reassigns. Oh, sorry, I'm so used to calling it release, and I know it's not supposed to be a release. Two courses of reassigned time for APC chair. And my understanding was that this past year we had said that we would use those for those who were looking into what to do with APC, but that didn't actually happen.
Right. We didn't allocate those.
Given that the reorg is going to take considerable time next year as well to make sure that all the committees, I am hoping, I don't know if I need a motion or anything, but I would like to suggest that we give those two courses to whoever leads the task force next year to give them sufficient time to warrant that until they decide that there should be an EPC and the EPC person needs it.
So and the idea too was when we made that decision last year, we were expecting that to be just a temporary thing until the standing committee got reestablished, because we assumed we were going to have the same number of standing committees even if they were reconfigured. So the assumption is let's just keep that carrying, not mess up. So any thoughts, questions, comments? Julie.
I think that's a great idea. I wonder, as another possibility, maybe give one of those course reassigned times to one person and another to another person, so there are two heads wrapping around this field.
Well, I think what's normally happened with the chairs going through is one person is usually taken the lead over time, and so we were thinking in this case whoever's leading the task force might, just for that continuity, they're running around to all these meetings. Catherine and then Melinda?
My first question is this reorganization going to take that much time to full course reassignment? 8 units, that's a lot. And I know that at least EPC, the chair of EPC, works at least that much time. I having been in your position, Richard, and knowing that this gets really political and weird, I'm not trying to make it political and weird. I just think there's a better case to be made that the EPC chair for at least one semester get a two-course release instead of one, and one course release after that. And correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't put in that kind of time. I mean, I'm...
Yes, I will not correct you.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know about student affairs, and I don't know about FSAC, but I do know about EPC, and it just seems like there's a phenomenal responsibility on the shoulders of whoever is chairing the committee.
So I'll go to Melinda, then to Kirsten, and then back to Julie.
In a related suggestion, something that some of us on EPC, Laura and I, have been discussing, is that another way to view it might be to have a vice chair on EPC, because who got a release, maybe only one, split the difference as you're describing, because part of what's come out of our discussion about what would assist EPC. You could either, view it as more release time for one person, or what I've said would be really good would be a dedicated, more dedicated staff support
or more practically a vice chair who could be doing some of the work. But it's there are different ways of sort of splitting it, but it does relate to finding a way to spread the workload around a little bit.
That's what we think is best.
So my thought is that's what the reorg is supposed to be thinking about, and that it might set a bad precedent to just throw one out for 1 year. In essence, my assumption is that you take one course release one semester, one course release the next. If the reorg is done by the end of the first semester, that course release would then go to whoever needed it in the renewed positions, right? So I think that, you know, there are many of us who spend a lot more time than the reassigned time. And I think if EPC needs that, that's part of the reorg, right? Do we split it up into two? Do we give the EPC chair four? You know, whatever it is, but not necessarily something that we at XCOM should just decide on the spur of sort of as a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. Unless you're saying that the reorg itself is causing EPC to have a lot more work, in which case then it makes sense. But we're essentially reallocating the APC stuff. So whoever is essentially doing the APC, I think, is the one who should get the reassigned time.
Okay. So let's go to Julie, Elaine, and then back to Melinda. Marty, are you getting on? Okay.
So I just want to comment about SAC. I mean, as a new chair this year, not having served in this position before, and at least in this current iteration of it, it feels, to be very frank, that it has the same reassigned time as, say, EPC doesn't feel fair, because the amount of work, at least as it currently stands, is felt significantly less, I think. So there might be, I mean, it's kind of funny to be saying that, but I think it's true. I mean, there's plenty of other work that happens, but I don't know that on SAC, at least as it currently stands. I think that academics, as the academic advising subcommittee gets absorbed into it, that will look quite different, so maybe that's a different conversation, but we don't know if that's necessarily going to unfold.
I mean, I know that in past years, SAC's been pretty darn busy.
Yeah.
Last year was a busy year, for instance. So, yeah, that bears some further thought. Elaine?
I was going to put in a plug for FSAC, and I think FSAC will be redoing the RTP policy next semester. Which, that's...
So then, Melinda, and then Laura.
I would come back to Catherine's original question about needing more of an understanding of the time involved in doing the reorg, and although it's a significant task, do we really know that it merits that much release time compared to some other places that might need it? And I would actually argue that EPC is doing APC's work right now. And so that's where all of those tasks are happening, because the policy stuff ended up being curricular policy, and EPC is doing it.
Laura, then Margie.
And just to chime in on that, I think part of the problem for EPC as well, at least as I'm seeing it and anticipating doing it myself, is not just the workload of the committee itself and all the various working groups and subcommittees and ad hocs that we end up doing as well. Mm-hmm. But then also all of the busy work of chasing down forms and making sure that, you know, the right signatures are on the right place. And I think that's a somewhat unique role, that the other, you know, even when FSAC and SAC are doing a lot of stuff, they still don't have quite that level of just paperwork. And that's why we were thinking of either, you know, whether it be sort of a vice chair or someone who is a staff support that could help chase down some of that stuff to take that part of the burden off. And I think that's needed whether there's a reorg or not.
Marky?
Okay, so I'm going to go at this slightly differently, and it's partly just a reflection of what I'm hearing. So if I'm hearing it wrong, everybody chime in, all right? But it occurs to me that what we're looking at is a list of assigned time units that are attached to positions. And the way we're talking about it, in large part, is actually in terms of tasks. So what if we think about it in terms of for a one time only, because I agree with Kirsten that this should not set any kind of precedent, and in effect can't, if we're going to do some kind of reorg, then all of this will go out the window, at least nominally, until the reorg is decided. But it seems to me that there are two domains of task that seem to be what people are talking about. One is the reorg itself, which ironically is currently being headed by the chair of FSAC. So there you go with FSAC. And the other one is the tasks that were APCs that continue to need to be done this past year, that in effect 99% of which EPC picked up, and that's really true. So what if we did it more in terms of task allocation? Take the units that would have been given to the APC chair and allocate them in terms of those two tasks, one of which is the reorg, one of which is the tasks that were APC's charge that others are now doing. And it seems to me that those two things are falling into two committees. One is into EPC, which is where the APC stuff went, and one is primarily into EPSAC, which has been heading, along with structure and functions, has been heading the task of the reorg. That might be a more helpful way to think about what to do with these two units, is that they're about tasks that should be, if the reorg process is effective, short term. In other words, EPC should not end up still doing all of APC's work by the time the reorg is over. And the reorg work will no longer be being done by EPSAC when the reorg is over. So we're talking about a one-time allocation, 1 year only, of those two courses to those two tasks. And it seems logical that they fall into EPC and EPSAC. I don't know how that would work, but...
Just as it's actually being led by a task force within structure and functions.
Okay.
Doug doesn't get any release at all.
He doesn't get any release at all, right.
Which is one of four in there. He's been active, but there are
gotcha.
Four there.
Okay, well, then
but
maybe
he
it's
does
structure
have some
function.
Release. So that was, and I have release. And Doug, and of course, Laura was ready.
So maybe we give it to the chair of structure and functions to do the reorg. I'm just saying. You're talking tasks, not positions.
And so
I wanted to follow up on that because I think that's a great idea. But I also think that one of the reasons I suggested to Richard that we do this here was because he was suggesting we take the structures and functions, and it seems not really fair to have Doug suggesting that he just seemed a conflict of interest. And to some extent, I feel that that's kind of true here, since we have all the chairs of the people who might get it. So I'm thinking that, I don't know, do we send it to, what body do we send it to sort of take a step back? Margie, you're shaking your head at me.
Procedurally, this is it's XCOM's job.
Well, procedurally, to some extent, it's structure and functions job, right?
Historically, the executive committee's name is this task, and we...
assigned here traditionally. Yeah. Catherine, did you
I was
something?
Is there I mean you folks are in the middle of this.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not this committee is not. So is there any way to do we have to decide this today or can we treat this as a first
Well, week? We do have to make the request by the end of the year so that the person gets the assignment starting in the fall, right? I mean, we can't be
right.
into the fall and not have an instructor in the course. So we have to let Academic Affairs know who we're asking to have in there. And they also need to know how many units are they giving us, because then the rest gets out.
Do we have time to treat this as a first reading in that context?
We could.
Because I'm wondering if you folks taking this back, the chairs, the current chair, past chair, vice chair, could take this back and maybe come back. I don't know, as an option. I mean, I could vote now, take it, but I...
With a description and a justification.
And don't get me wrong, I haven't had the conversation, but have you already spoken to Andrew that he's willing to give you those units?
Well, this is the
annual request. Right.
You're
making the request, but you should have that conversation with him before you expend all this energy. And I'm not saying that because I know anything.
Well,
I think we have to decide before we can make a request.
But you're making a request for that.
Yeah, and it's the annual request. And in the past, it's not rubber stamping by any means. But I haven't been given any signals that that they were targeting this stuff and normally would be there. But I'll be having conversations with them, so that makes sense too. Yeah.
Well, if it's time sensitive, I say let's go with Margie's idea of doing it. We're splitting the APC responsibilities between EPC and on a one-time basis, anticipating that reorganization is done between EPC and whoever else is doing it, whether that's
whoever's
heading it. Yeah, I would say let's make it the task force, because the rest of structure and function stuff is the same. It's that task force that's really picking up some of that work.
Whatever.
Does that sound like a reasonable thing? Go forward with that as our request? Any objections to that?
I don't have an objection. I do think Melinda's point of I don't mean to sound flip when I say this, but I don't quite understand why the reorg is going to take that much time.
They have to go to every single committee already now.
I said, I really don't mean to sound flip. It's just As an individual, I can't see that, so I have no way of knowing, and that's where it would have, I don't know.
Well, and I don't see why EPC needs more than two, so that would be the argument for doing what Catherine said. What I meant is that would be the reason why you would bring it forward with the description
before
the next time.
I'm going to make a ruling here.
Which is subject to being overruled by the committee.
It is definitely subject to being overruled.
Just say it.
Let's come back to this at the next XCOM. I will have a conversation with Andrew and just make sure that there isn't any panic going on and whatever.
Panic?
You know, that we would be losing some, right? Because we have never been yanked out from under us, right?
That was a long time ago.
But I haven't been seeing those things. So I can probe that direction, make sure that there's no particular crisis coming in that we would have to be thinking about this. If folks can make cases in the meantime, send them my way, and we can bring it forward as proposals to do it. I like several of the ideas in here. The idea is this would be transitional. So let's just do that next time around, and I'd love to hear the ideas in the meantime. So let's move to our next time certainly, which is the Human Development Program. And so for this one, because I'm going to be here on behalf of Human Development, since I'm one of the faculty advisors in that program, I'm handing the gavel over to Kirsten. And here we go. We've got the speaker first.
You're going to do it for me? Thank you very much.
I will introduce this.
Please.
All right. So, Richard, thank you for representing Human Development here today. So, in your packet, you have there are two parts to this proposal, but really only one involves action at the Senate level. So, Human Development, you may recall, earlier this year brought forward a revision to their program for next year's catalog. So, they already made an interim revision to adjust to various changes that had happened in terms of courses not being available to offer students, etc., because sociology pulled its courses from Human Development. Since then, psychology has also pulled most of their courses from Human Development. And so Karen Jaffe stepped in as interim coordinator. She did a quick and dirty revise for next year's catalog. That has already been approved. So what's in your packet is actually for 16-17, for the following year's catalog. And part of why it was important to get this through now is because it's linked to a planned reorganization of Human Development. Human Development is a program with a major, a BA, in the School of Social Sciences, but it was not in the past linked to a particular department that had sort of buck stops here, administrative responsibilities to get things done for the program. And so because it wasn't linked to a program, it floundered a lot, things didn't happen, catalogs didn't get updated, it was a huge mess. And so the dean of social sciences worked to find a home for human development. I don't know how much you want to go into the details of that process, but the reorganization the reorganization that's being planned here is for human development to move underneath the anthropology department. And so it would have a separate coordinator, but it would be housed, connected to anthropology in sort of an administrative sense. And so anthropology would now offer an additional BA in human development. Now, as you notice from the documents that are in here, anthropology has agreed to this contingent on a hire for human development, which they've been told will happen, and so they have agreed to take it in. The reorganization document, you might see, has a step where it comes to EPC, and EPC has to comment on whether the proposed reorg has any curricular implications, the idea being that that's the point to jump up and down and say this is problematic. But what EPC instead was able to say is, yes, in fact, it's contingent on this reorg. It's an additional cleanup, refinement of the major. And EPC unanimously supported the proposed revision that is linked to the reorganization. So Senate is going to be considering, assuming that it gets put on the Senate agenda, is going to be considering the revision to the program. That doesn't technically have anything to do with the reorganization. However, the reorganization document notes that anthropology will not take it unless the revision is approved, if all of that makes sense. So what you're really considering here is the revision to the human development program, but as context and implication, you probably want to also know about the reorganization paperwork.
Okay, and before we turn it over to Richard, let me remind us that we're talking about readiness and presentation, so let's be thinking about what we want to suggest for making sure that they're able to bring this forward in a way that will be smoother. Richard.
Okay. So,
and make one comment here, is that typically, of course, curricular revision proposals go on as consent items, and so you might want to consider whether that's going to happen or not, and if it does happen, is there going to be enough time in the agenda for it to get pulled off as a business item, because that may happen.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, so there is that context, but we did want to focus on the task that we're really trying to say is, do we approve of the curriculum changes? And at our school's curriculum committee, it did get a unanimous decision there. And at EPC, it did get unanimous decision there.
Yes.
So so it does have the potential for being on the consent calendar.
Yes.
And so what you'll see in these documents are just one thing mentioning that bigger context. Then the main things that are addressed in the befores and afters that we see in here are showing the differences between this. There's a few basic problems. Transfer students get admitted into the program by different criteria than native Sonoma State students. And so one thing the program corrects is aligning those so that all the students would have to have a C or better in the prerequisite courses coming in. Right now, the folks transferring in getting easier than the folks here. Second, we have and part of the big packet that you had sent electronically and not the rest, were a lot of the communications about the various courses and that the departments would be supporting it. So all the courses that are being put forward from here on out are ones that we expect, we have agreement from all the departments. It's not problematic at all to have the human development majors in there. We were constantly finding some key courses were being closed off to human development majors and they were having trouble completing the degree because the courses weren't being offered. So those are addressed in there, and in all cases, we've managed to find more than one course to satisfy the requirements for any of those that aren't being offered by the human development program itself. And then thirdly, one thing that makes the human development program what it is at Sonoma State is that it is an interdisciplinary human development program. Sometimes people will talk about human development as a variant of developmental psychology. And this was from the outset always meant to be an interdisciplinary. But one of the things that we've seen through practice and accident is that lots of students that couldn't get into psych because it was impacted, or couldn't get into sociology because it was impacted, were just taking all the psych courses and the human development courses and a few others and trying to get a sort of a wannabe psych degree or wannabe sociology
degree.
Psych by
proxy. Right,
and so what this program is really designed, and that's where the choices of they have to take courses across the different departments with all of the ones in the School of Education being considered a same department. So that they get some school event, some sociology.
They can do the GE classes.
Yeah, the GE sociology, some anthro, some psychology, some WGS. And so if they really do want a minor or a double major, it has to be a careful, concerted effort, and it's not being closed out of those main ones. So it's not a byproduct. So those are some of the main things that we're doing. And then the core that also helps make it the interdisciplinary is they've only had a very minor amount of units that have, and you'll see that in on page, this way, you'll see on page 2, the proposed courses show a bunch of human development courses now. And so in the past, they only had AMP 318, which actually once upon a time was cross-listed as HD 318, and the senior project, and then the 391. There was only actually 4 units in human development courses. Now we're going to see 12 units in topics that are done by the human development program, and those will really highlight what's knitting these various courses from the disciplines together, which is specifically the lifespan development cross-disciplinary angle. And so how to keep using all those courses will be strongly integrated into those. And so that makes it significantly more coherent than it was in the past. And so that's the main part there. It's also a way that the cohorts will identify each other instead of accidentally bumping into each other. Oh, you're a human development too. That it'll help with all the advising and really the coherence of the program. And so I think that's most of it, and I'm hoping that these documents show with a before and after there's a rationale in each case. With that, I'm open for any questions or suggestions.
Okay, opening up for questions, we have Julie and then Sam on the speaker's list. Remember that we're talking about readiness.
So mine are real specific questions. They relate to readiness just because I want some clarity on this. You addressed some of this, Richard, but those 12 units, who will that be taught? Will those be taught by this new, hopefully new faculty member entirely within the Anthro?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if an Anthro person is doing it, that person might be covering what that person is. Because, for instance, some of my area could be going into that since I deal with child language acquisition and whatever. So it's possible it would switch out,
right.
But then that person would be able to step
in for
us.
HD courses. It
won't
be
HD courses.
Right. Yeah, but it'll be a faculty member who is in the
HD program
within anthropology department.
Administered through anthropology.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then follow up. Mm-hmm. 12 units, are those the only HD specific courses then?
Yeah, these will be closed to majors.
Okay.
With the rare exception of some that would come in.
Sam?
Yes, so just want to clarify also, so is the anthropology department saying that they will take over this program, but only if they get a new hire and one of the 6 new hires of next year, and if they are not guaranteed that hire, then they will not take over the program, and
yes.
it will be one of the 6, and we're going to tell the Senate that one of the 6 is going to go to anthropology because they're going to take over this program?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Program discontinuous,
Just a quick clarification on what Richard said. Sociology is not yet impacted, and HD is impacted. And so we were not one of the majors in that relationship that you were describing, but we have too many HD students taking our classes. So I think that I just wanted to emphasize that EPC fully supported this proposal and thought that Karen did an excellent job in doing the best she could with the resources available and maintaining the interdisciplinary nature of the program. But I think that to Sam's question, I think, the way that it's been framed to the
to the social science chairs is that it's already understood that there's a hire that goes with HD, and the conversation was who is going to be taking on HD. And just to step aside a little bit more, last year, I'm in my role as former social science curriculum committee chair, I can say that the social science chairs last year had a long discussion about what to do with HD, and at that point voted to move forward with discontinuance. And instead, it was decided that it was, meaning administrators decided that it was better to pursue finding a home for it because it had 120 majors. So that, you know, that's another side of the story that I think is separate to this, and that's why I don't know how much of that is something that we need to, you know, preface at the Senate meeting. I don't think it is.
So our 4 o'clock time certain is here, but if we could have our last two people on the speakers list.
Just a quick clarification that the...
Elaine was first.
Oh, I got it.
You are forgiven for thinking because
I
was like
this. I was just going to have... I think the signatures are mucked up on this reorganization page. Karen Jaffe is there twice. And everybody else, she should just be there once, and everybody else should be moved up.
No, it's because she's the coordinator of the program and the chair of the social sciences curriculum committee.
So it says agreement by dean of previous school. Maybe that should be different then.
Let me see.
Oh, I mean, I get it then. I get why.
Yeah, that's why she's on there twice. I'll look to see if the lines are messed up.
But then I don't know if people will understand that she's, that it's not dean of previous school, that it's coordinator of.
Yeah, I see what's going on.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's funky.
I think this one was assuming that something was moving from one school to another.
Okay.
Right.
We'll clarify.
Okay.
We'll fix that.
Okay.
Yeah. Is the dean of the school?
Exactly.
I might appreciate the
promotion.
But then she won't be a faculty, so she won't know anything.
Okay, so that needs to be here.
Good point. We'll clarify.
And just the other very quick clarification, I think, is the relationship of HD to AMP is that they're not one and the same. Mm-hmm. In the same way that geography and global studies are separate programs, they're both administered by geography. So the new hire would be an HD hire, not an AMP hire. And the classes are HD classes. And whether an AMP professor decides to teach an HD class or vice versa would be a separate issue. But I think in that sense, they really are separate programs.
So the HD hire might not necessarily have a background in anthropology.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you. So do we think it's ready? Do we have unanimous agreement? Let's have a motion.
I'll move to move it forward to the Senate.
All right.
I move to have it as a consent item.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Oh, any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed?
Louder?
Me.
There we go.
Okay, so we have one opposed, so I believe...
It's a review as a business item. Mm-hmm. So we'll work with Karen to save the time, certainly.
Did I just put it on?
Yep. So there'll be a 3-hour Senate meeting next time because we've got,
I'm sorry,
which might should be anyway. But
yeah,
that's
no,
okay.
It's all right. I thought that's why you did it, but
it should.
No worries.
No, I think because of the politics, I think that there should be a part of the record.
Yeah.
I did.
You vote your conscience, and whatever it implies.
Absolutely.
No harm, no foul.
I have no problem with
telling
that.
The political scientists really? Faculty that. Probably okay.
And unnecessary, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're the one who said, all right.
Okay.
Ed, welcome. You
Thank
are.
You.
Oh,
where
sorry.
Is Ed? There he is.
Yes.
I'm going to welcome you, and then I'm going to hand the gavel back to Richard, who has now become the chair again.
All right. Great. Okay. Okay, so welcome, Ed.
All right. Yeah, here on behalf of Richard Witkus, who couldn't make it today. So,
At our last FSAC meeting last week, mostly discussion items. For instance, we had a presentation by Matthew Callahan about assessing teaching effectiveness as we continue to look at the SETIs and how we might make them a better instrument for measuring performance in the classroom. Also, we discussed, somebody brought to the FSAC's attention the university statement of professional responsibility and the fact that I think the document was created in 1971. Some of you may not have even been born yet, I'm not sure, but we decided, well, maybe it's time that we consider looking at just all of our documents in general and see which ones could use some updating, which ones stand as they are. So that's something that you can expect from FSAC over the next year or so to start kind of reviewing all the various documents in terms of age. And we also are getting ready to start outlining that is our major areas for the URTP revision process, which will take place next year. Again, just kind of setting the stage for that action next year. No action was taken on any of these items, all discussion items. The one action item of any consequence that we dealt with was approving the Professional Development Subcommittee report for this academic year. That's the subcommittee that I chair, and I believe everybody got a copy of the report. So basically, just to kind of really briefly recap the report, it essentially is a follow-up to the report we gave in, I believe, fall semester, rather, of 2013. And at that report, we had based a lot of it on some of the comments and discussion items at the faculty retreat based on professional development and areas that we thought could use some attention. Two of the pages were provided, page 2 and 3, by Ann Steckel this past fall, addressing specific things that were brought up in that report and things that have happened since then. So as you can see, as you look through that, there has been quite a bit of significant progress, both since Ann Steckel was hired and since more attention has been given to the faculty center. And then we have our recommendations for areas of change and improvement going forward. Number one on the list, not randomly, I might add, was the technology issue, which was, we wanted to laud the fact that the technology task force is giving an opportunity for representatives from faculty and staff to get together and discuss some of these issues, and that there is a timetable, for instance, for getting all the classrooms smart. But we further recommended that there be a broader master plan for the university put together by faculty, administration, and staff that would take more of a long-term approach to exactly what is technology to this campus, what does it mean, what kind of things do we want to see happen. We also believe that the relationship between faculty and IT needs to move beyond merely, hey, I need something fixed in this room, can you come handle that, and figure out ways to create dialogue and communication so that we can come up with creative and innovative uses of technology in the classroom. Some other areas we thought might be worth exploring. The stipends were increased this year for professional development opportunities, and from discussions with people who took part in those stipend-sponsored programs, there was a lot of positive feedback that they really appreciated being compensated somewhat for their time. One of the key issues, of course, continues to be the heavy workload that faculty is under, and so just that kind of gesture of appreciation that people are taking extra time to improve their pedagogy and improve their teaching skills, that we felt should be noted. Also, we just called for more emphasis on professional development involvement in the
tenuring process, really emphasizing to candidates that in terms of teaching evaluation, maybe we shouldn't be just so SETI focused as a lot of people tend to be, and look at other things that you're doing, such as participating in professional development opportunities. And then, number four was increased staffing for professional development related programs. So we're talking about possibly getting support staff for not only the Faculty Center, but the Center for the Community Engagement to broaden their ability to reach faculty and create more opportunities. And then finally, just more opportunities for dialogue. We believe that a key component in creating professional development is increased dialogue between faculty and administration. I might also add that we also feel strongly that more faculty-to-faculty opportunities are important as well. We had a joint chair provost lunch and professional development this past Monday, and we were talking a little bit about just the chance for people from different disciplines to be able to communicate with each other and to discuss items. We noted that one of the most successfully attended events recently was the whiskey tasting. And so I don't know if there is a trend developing there. I've also heard from Elaine that the beer CFA meeting was very well attended too, so maybe we're on to something here. But in all seriousness, just looking for ways for faculty to come together and create avenues of communication. And that's essentially the report in a nutshell. So.
So do we have any questions for FSAC? Christian?
Yeah, so looking through this, I can't find anything about increasing professional development in regards to building a more inclusive classroom environment. And I was just curious as if why that wasn't addressed or if that topic just never came up.
Well, I don't think we looked at, when we think about professional development, I would certainly include that issue as part of the broader picture. We weren't in this report specifically dealing with this type of professional development or that type, just kind of the whole broad spectrum of inclusiveness. But I would certainly support efforts to create programs with inclusiveness in mind. Yeah.
And we have had them.
Yeah.
In the fall when I was on the committee, we did have them. So it's not that they're...
And I think that's also, I'm sure Richard has mentioned in previous meetings that that's, Richard Witkus, I should clarify, has mentioned that that's something that will probably come before FSAC more in the coming year as well, because that's been brought to our attention, particularly from Christian and other students. So we will be looking at that more seriously as we go into the next academic year.
And I can speak from the, sitting on the President's Diversity Council, it's an issue that we're reaching. Of course, PDS as well, is how do we deal with diversity and other kinds of issues in that choice. Okay, any other questions for FSAC? If not, we have our time certainly.
Just one quick question. I did want to be able to present this at full Senate, too. I think it's good in terms of creating dialogue on professional development. So, it wouldn't have to be the next meeting, but if it was possible to have it on one of the next two Senate agendas, that would be great.
Would you like it as part of the FSAC reports, or would you like it actually as a business
Report? Whatever works out. Just an opportunity to kind of formally present it so that... it's out there and people can discuss.
We'll try as best we can.
Yeah.
The next two Senates are going to be pretty chock-a-block.
Action-packed.
So we might have to shoehorn it in with FSAC reports or something, but
okay.
Let's document this opportunity.
All right.
At the least, we can get this document out to everybody.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. All right, then. So thank you, Ed, for coming in and covering for Richard.
You bet.
So we now turn to business item number four. This is the early childhood education certificate that they're bringing forward, and John Felpenke is here from the School of Ed to cover this. So I will turn it over to it's one of those Melinda days.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. I know. Spring is supposed to be light when it comes to curriculum, but not this semester.
Well, we're getting ahead.
I hope so. I hope so. Laura hopes so. Okay, so in your packet, you have a proposal for a new certificate program. Note, of course, this is an academic credit certificate program. It's a graduate level certificate in early childhood education. And note also that it's an online certificate, so a little bit different in that regard compared to some of the other academic credit certificates. EPC unanimously supported this certificate and waived the first reading, which is why you have it here in your packet. Also, note that the proposal document itself was quite lengthy, and so if you look at the table of contents, after the signature sheets, titled Proposal for Online Certificate in Early Childhood Education, you'll note that your packet only has the information listed in Roman numeral 1 under proposal, and that all of the syllabi and supporting documents went out electronically only. So what's in your packet is the highlight of the proposal, and the supporting material is there and quite rich, but went out electronically. So why don't I have Johanna describe briefly the certificate.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Oh, and would it help for us to introduce who's around the table?
I think some people.
Hi, it's
Margie. Laura Watt from Environmental Studies and Planning. I'm an at-large Senate.
Thank you. Yeah, I know
Belinda.
Right.
Christian from Associate Students.
Yeah. Gilmore for the Administration of Finance.
The president, I know.
Elaine Newman.
I know.
She's here as our CFA chapter president.
Catherine Nelson.
Julie Shulman.
Oh, okay.
Tom Tompkins.
Okay. And we're neighbors.
Yes.
Yes, Julie's here. Julie's here as chair of the Student Affairs Committee. Tom is our new secretary of the Senate. Sam's here as one of our at-larges. Yep.
Thank you. I know most of you, but I'm not really offended. So thank you for having us here. Chiara right now is at a community advisory board meeting in the student center, so I am here representing both of us. Very briefly, the idea for this certificate came about because California now has something that's called the transitional kindergarten, which is basically a preschool which is now in public education. The teachers who teach there are multiple subject teachers, and their preparation is mostly from kindergarten to grade 8. They don't have the preparation to work with children in preschool. There is a legislation out now that says that by 2020, elementary school teachers have to have coursework or a child development permit if they want to teach in transitional kindergartens. So there is great demand for a specific professional development in early childhood education for the younger children. However, people who need this are people who are working full time. They don't have a flexible schedule. They live in Clear Lake, in Mendocino County, in East Bay, all over the place. So we have been getting requests for professional development in this area. There is also a new law that provides financial incentives for teachers to take these courses. So we designed this course. It is totally independent from our master's degree on campus. It's through extended education, but the three of the courses are courses that are on our books for our master's program. We developed a fourth course, which is the field experience, which the candidates for the certificate would need in order to get the child development permit. So the course will be totally online. We have been preparing for this, studying, learning, trying out online courses in our early childhood studies bachelor's degree and MBMA through hybrid courses. So we are excited that this might happen. So if you have questions.
And so as with so many of our other curriculum things, has it come through as
yes. Yes.
So we've had unanimous consent all the way up. So yeah, it has the potential to be put on our consent calendar. So we're looking at both readiness, but also if we put it forward as consent, knowing that we might be the last set of eyes that look at it quite rigorously, as we've kind of seen evidence of elsewhere. Given that, any questions or suggestions on making this clearer?
Yeah. So three of the courses that you currently offer will now be offered online through Extended Ed. Is that what you're saying? Is that there's no feeling of supplanting?
No, there? Because the students in our MA program are taking these courses in a hybrid fashion on campus, and they like that. They like the professional networking, and they like the fact that they are here having every other week physical face-to-face. We don't foresee that will impact our MA program. However, the people who do take the certificate, they can apply in three of those courses to an MA, but they would have to apply formally for a master's program, just like all the other students.
So
we actually foresee that this will bring in more MA students. I don't think it will impact our MA program. They're separate.
But if they came in, they wouldn't have to take the courses from you. They would have already taken them online through Extended Ed.
Exactly, yeah.
I have two questions. Who is going to teach the courses, the certificate courses, and will this be like in summer?
We will be offering one of the courses in summer. Good question. We will be offering one course per semester because people who take the certificate are working full time. So we will be teaching them on overload. I mean, we will be paid through extended education. One of us. Right now we're full tenure track faculty, so that's good. But they will all be...
Okay, I'm just wondering if there are any, contractual implications about that. Maybe not. And the second question is,
we can get paid 25%
And then the second question is, was originally, is online coursework in this area standard in your discipline? One of the questions about online education is that it is more successful. They're most successful when it is used in an environment where students are ready and disciplined and self-directed and all of that. And I know at this level they would be, but I'm wondering, is it standard to do online in this field? And you said you've tried it out in the bachelor's, you tried it out in the master's, but then you say that you can't find anywhere else in California that has the equivalent wholly online. So I'm just curious if that is something you could add to some fuller elaboration on the online aspect of this in the proposal.
I think the point that you make is very important, in that online learning requires a very specific set of skills. People have to be very disciplined. They have to be self-directed learners. And there also is the issue that a lot of students don't have the tech skills. So in the budget that we develop with extended education, we're going to have an assistant who will be working with the students, helping them with the technological aspect. We think it might be one of the graduate students in the educational technology MA, or somebody else. But there will be a paid person to do to help with the tech issues. We also are developing. It's sort of an introductory unit where we teach them basic skills. Like, some students don't know how to create a PDF file, how to download Adobe Acrobat FileMaker, how to use Moodle, what about plagiarism. So we are working on a one unit. They don't have to pay for it, but they have to complete it before they can start on our regular course. And we have help for it. Now, in terms of there not being another certificate like this in California, I don't think I said that, and I am not sure.
I thought I saw that. You said you couldn't find, there was some reference to
We do not know of any other online programs such as this one within the CSU system. Okay, so that's
within
what
the CSU
said.
System,
yeah.
Right.
So it's likely what
there are other online programs from private universities, and they are more expensive. Yeah, thank you. So it is
common in your discipline to use online education in the graduate at the graduate level.
Yes, yes.
Could you put that in here?
That would be a
very helpful sentence.
Sure,
yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay, so Kirsten and then Julie.
Just to follow up on that, which wasn't actually my question, but School of Ed is not necessarily in early childhood, but they've got their startup classroom. They're doing a number of certificate programs online right now, so this is not out of what our School of Education is doing, so that might be helpful to put that too. I just wanted to confirm, and it kind of goes on a slightly different direction from what Catherine said, but it's the same thing. Since this is through the School of Extended and International Education, it's completely self-support, right?
Yes.
So it is not requiring any additional
resources,
mm-hmm. at least at this point. And so I think that's important too, because mm-hmm. given that we're worried about hiring and all of that, making that clear, I think helps people understand that
yes,
it's not going to add a burden.
Yeah, we did mention that in the budget. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. However, we do want to make sure that students who take these courses through extended education don't pay less than our regular students. So with the extra services that we are providing, with the tech help and the additional introduction, the students will in the certificate will be paying the same as the students in our stateside main.
So there's not an incentive to not.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just exactly.
Right.
But it's on
feedback. Yeah,
right.
I just don't know.
Right. Okay.
Okay,
just a follow-up to what Catherine was asking about the online component, and your answer made a lot of sense. I just had a specific question about the advanced field experience and how that is conducted online.
The people who take the certificate are working in the field. So they have their own classroom.
Mm-hmm.
There are some online tools now where you can do long distance supervision, where they take little videos of themselves teaching. And then you have group discussions. You do peer observations and you ask the person, okay, what was your goal? What worked? What didn't work? What surprised you? What would you do differently? And then the other peers would also observe. So it's a little bit like the lesson study model from, mm-hmm. you know, Japan. We don't tend to do that. But there are some really cool tools now that you can use.
So in order for a person, just to follow up, to enroll in this program, they would actually have to have their own classroom.
Yes.
A student who's interested
or
in going into
they
a...
could, if they don't have their own classroom, they could go and, you know, work and, yeah, be,
right.
you know, yeah. That would be totally acceptable if they don't have their own classroom.
Okay.
Sam? Could students in your MA program choose to take one of these online courses instead of the hybrid course?
They could, but only up to 9 units. You know, that's the CSU goal. We will be offering one of the courses in the summer, so this might help our graduate students to move through the program more quickly. Which is something that they like.
But they could take it during the, they could choose to take one of the courses they would normally take stateside. They could take it through extended ed during the school year?
They could, but you know, it's not convenient for them because right now most of our students take two courses. They pay the half tuition stateside. So if they take an additional course, if they pay, it's more expensive for them. They would be paying $6,000 for one course.
I just thought there was some restriction about being able to take a course, stateside course, through extended ed during the school year. I just
if that course is offered at the same time, yeah, I think you're right. There is.
If there are ways to do it, it's a different mechanism for doing it, so online versus
hybrid.
There are all sorts of rules, and so mm-hmm. presumably, if extended ed says it fits those rules, they're pretty simple about that.
Of course.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Something online that's offered.
Or discussion?
Yeah.
So is this ready to be put on the agenda and potentially as a consent item?
I think we would have to add the comment that Catherine brought up, which I think is really important about the fact that this is quite common in early childhood. Actually, Chiara, our department chair, she, before she came here, she did teach an online MA.
So do I hear a motion to put this on the agenda?
Yes. So I'll move to put it on the agenda, and if that is unanimous, to have it default to the consent calendar.
Second.
So any objections to this being put on the consent calendar? Okay.
So with items, we typically have
them brought forward at the very beginning. Sometimes there can be a question at that point, and it's possible that someone might want it pulled for actual discussion, in which case we don't have a time certain, but we usually try to deal with it right there because people are there. But just as a warning, I do know our next Senate session's out to be fairly so it'll be interesting.
Okay,
that
we will do that. In case anything.
Yeah, and we usually have business the first 5 or 10 minutes, in that first 5 or 10 minutes is when the consent calendar comes up.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
well,
thank
good
you
job.
Very much.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Captains.
All right. So let's see. 4:30. Oh. Actually, don't have a time
certain.
So,
what are we going to do?
Yeah, oh my goodness. Read for a minute.
We could have.
So, why don't we do a couple of reports? And then, one thing I was thinking as we get to the agenda is, as part of setting the agenda, talk a little bit about the last agenda and the next agenda and how we can set ourselves up for better flow and understanding. So, let's go to State Mike Sanders.
We had our interim meetings via teleconference, trying to use Zoom in some cases, Friday. And the one thing coming out of the Academic Affairs Committee was continued discussion about the transferability of upper division, not just general education units, but in community college bachelor's programs, but also under AB 386, the transferability of upper division general education and program-specific courses to the home campus. And the word out of the chancellor's office is that under Levine's AB 386, which said you have to put all your courses, information about all your online courses in one place, it also said that those courses have to be treated by the home campus the same way they are by the host campus. And the chancellor's office has interpreted that to include upper division general education, which again gets at this issue of campus autonomy and upper division GEs being one way that we control the uniqueness of what it means to be Sonoma State or San Jose State. So that is all going to get rolled into the, resolution on upper division general education that I told you about last time, that I talked to our general education subcommittee about here last week. So that was the major thing coming out of academic.
Okay. Any questions for our statewide senators? All right. Thank you, Kevin. Let's go to administration and finance. Neil, did Larry send you with anything to tell us?
No.
Okay. Do we have questions, comments to send back to administration and finance?
Yes. but
anything to go back? Oh, I did notice on the back of some of the restroom doors, there's some, have we checked these things? So clearly some message has been getting through. So you can let him know that that's been noted. There's been discussions recently, either in here or at Senate, about how facilities sometimes could be perhaps cleaner. Perhaps gotten too much airtime for that august body, but nevertheless, it's something that matters. So, anything else to go back? Okay. Let's move to student affairs. Matthew.
A few quick things. Excuse me.
the hire for the halftime programmer and halftime gender education person in the hub. We have three candidates coming to campus. So that was a promise that Dr. Armand Yana made a while ago, and now hit that hiring season, so we're able to get all the candidates. Our first go around, we didn't find anybody who we felt would fill the position and help both those skills. The folks that have taught and went to, gone to NASPA, the National Conference for Student Affairs Professionals, feel like they have three strong candidates, and we should be successful in the search. Also, the children's school has been meeting. Can we talk about this?
Go for it.
Children's school has been meeting and talking about tuition and tuition hikes. Unlike in past years, we've actually held three open forums for faculty, staff, and folks that might be impacted by any kind of change to the pricing to come and give us our feedback. Our next meeting, I think, is this Friday. Last time, we hoped to kind of get in and tell us some things. We had the vice presidents of the CSU for Student Affairs meet. There wasn't anything great earth-shattering examples there. We talked about the audit findings for the health centers, and we addressed some of those audit findings in our committee. We talked about going smoke-free versus tobacco-free and how some campuses are grappling with that. Kind of interesting looking at the behavior of the Central Valley, Fresno, and Bakersfield, really talking about tobacco-free is a little bit harder for them. More people are deciding to use and so they were looking at those differences. And then we had a professional development. We had Killings and Associates come in. He's a person who wrote Learning Reconsidered. But he gave us some education on third-party billing and what that means for health centers and the new Affordable Care Act and how all those things mesh and what's best practices, what's not the best practice. And I think that's... And we had the alcohol and drug conference, since you were all going to whiskey tastings and having free beer. With the students were busy looking at alcohol and other substance abuse, we brought three students with us, including Georgia, our medical director, and Tony Barakia, who does a lot of work with our Save a Seat program in alcohol and drug education.
Can I add
questions?
A couple things that you had brought up? You mentioned talking about... looking at the UC's immunization.
Oh, the immunization.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked briefly as the vice presidents about there's a push to match the UC immunization policy. Right now, we currently, I think it's probably going to get it wrong. I think it's meningitis and the MR.
MMR.
MMR. Where's Deb when you need her? I can't remember if it was meningitis or hepatitis. I can't remember which one we asked for, but it's one of those two. And we're looking at matching up to the UCs. They have a much more rigorous requirement. Given the recent outbreaks around the nation, they're looking at that and wondering how to grapple with that.
Executive order is in the making on the matter of immunization, which will expand the requires.
Any other questions? Appreciate it.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Thank the Title IX coordinators for sending out that revised email about what's expected for that Title IX training. And one thing that I noticed that I had a question from, especially the graduating seniors, it doesn't address graduating seniors as if they will be held to a requirement to fulfill that survey and that training. I know it's encouraged that they should, but will they be held to any punishment if they don't finish that required training?
Only you and Anthony and Alina will be.
That's what I figured was going to happen.
I don't know. I'd have to follow up with Joyce, but I doubt, given it's just rolled out, that we're going to be tracking our seniors down and asking them to comply with us and pulling degrees. So I believe I'd be safe in saying no. But I would
hold
like
it upon graduation, say no.
Only if they walk out at the before the
middle
end
of
commencement.
Right.
We're going to place hold on transcript.
Okay. I don't know if you've been approached recently by anybody in academic affairs or anybody else in the President's Diversity Council, but we've also been looking more into the Hispanic Serving Institution materials, and so if that hasn't been happening, we should be opening up some more communications on that.
One last thing. I don't know if any of you have heard the movie The Hunting Ground.
Yeah.
We aired that last night. There was a panel of us, and about 35 students showed up. So thank you, faculty, who said, you can get extra credit if you go to this and write a paper. That was the majority of the folks that were there. And there was a lively conversation. We had someone from Verity there. Our chief of police was there, Nate Johnson. Joyce Suzuki was there, Joyce's intern, myself, and our student advocate. So students were able to engage in dialogue with us, but it was a good conversation.
All right, so unless there's anything else, let's move to EPC. Anything else to report besides all that business?
Yes, I can let you know that on next week's EPC agenda, I expect two new business items, revision to the biochemistry BS, and also an additional academic credit certificate. This one, it's called French Language for Wine Business. And it's a certificate that's being put together jointly by ANH and business, as you might guess. So I'm
taking that course.
So what that means is that, of course, you know, we've warned them that unless the first reading is waived, they're not going to be able to make it onto a Senate agenda. But assuming that the first readings are waived, then they will be ready for you to potentially be on the last Senate agenda.
Did you tell them that they had to bring wine?
I was going
to
say, if they bring wine, there's a much increased chance of it waiving the first reading, don't you think?
And speak in French.
That, and could they have Gaelic for whiskey drinkers? Anyway.
So just to give you a heads up, there might be two more EPC items for the very last meeting of the year.
Okay. So for those wondering about the SSU info line stuff, there was an accident off campus and it's been cleared, so don't worry about Petaluma Head Road. That's what these buzzings
are happening.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so we already had FSAC student affairs.
Yes. At our last meeting yesterday, Marissa Thigpen, who's the sole international student advisor, came to consult with SAC around how best to inform faculty about appropriate advising with international students. I don't know if you're all are aware of this, but there was a student who withdrew from the university and their sort of regular advisor signed off on the withdrawal form, and the student fell out of legal status immediately. Basically into the other country instantly. So she was checking in with us around how to best communicate to faculty, what procedures to follow when communicating with international students. One change has been done, which seems like a really good one, which is that now the total withdrawal form has been amended so that it requires her signature before it goes through. That's a good one. Good catch. I think, Matthew, you made the suggestion that a notation is made on the AAR to note that the student is an international student. And then we gave her some more feedback regarding specificity of language around. She had a pretty extensive sheet, and that's going to be distributed to various departments so that faculty are aware, under these circumstances, please send your student to the international advisor rather than advising yourself. So it's with any change in major, withdrawing from the university, employment issues, everything. She really needs to be in the loop on those. We don't want people falling with legal status. And then Rob and Marshall from IT came and spoke with us about the migration of student email. Some of you may be already aware of what's happening there. But one thing that was news to me that I didn't realize is now that there'll be a Google domain within Sonoma.edu. So and everyone's going to be on Exchange, student, staff, faculty, so we can type in a student's email, our name, and get their email popping up just like we do with one another, which is going to be really convenient, I think. easier, you know, rather than the 10-step process to sign a student email. Yeah, I'll take it. And then Career Services is going through their second recruitment right now, conducting interviews for that one-year position for Career Services. Orientations are going currently sort of for the transfer students coming in. And the residential community is piloting a live-in SSP in addition to the live-in faculty. So maybe if there's someone interested, they'll have a staff person working in the residential communities as well.
Any questions for student affairs? All right, let's see.
Real quick. I just, regarding the transfer student,
Orientation.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm getting over a cold and my brain isn't working yet. For the students that come in May, mm-hmm. I've brought this up in several other forums, and I'm so worried they have nothing.
In terms of classes, there's nothing
for them to register for. And as chair of my department, who will likely be doing that transfer orientation, I did it last year, and both my AC and I spent literally something like 4 hours trying to find something for them to register for. We had some students that were talking about just giving up and dropping back out again. Some were actually very angry. It was incredibly uncomfortable situation to be put in, and I know that there's no way around. People who haven't paid by this date can't register.
Yeah.
But that we've got to find some kind of a solution to mm-hmm. that, because there's just no classes for them left.
In their first semester here,
there's no yeah. there's very few major classes, and there's really no GEs.
Mm-hmm. If they're transfers, they're hoping to only have 3 semesters.
Right.
Beyond that, yeah. Okay.
I don't know if anything can be done, but just wanted to float it back up again.
Any other questions or comments for student affairs? Captain.
Out of curiosity, why is their registration for classes so late? I'm not familiar with the process.
If they haven't paid their bill by a certain date, they can't register in
by a certain other date.
So it's sort of the catch up. I'm not sure why we don't just say there's one deadline, but
I'm just so far beyond
my understanding of how the university works.
But it's also related that there's some sort of general. Is it a system-wide May 1 final deadline? And so they have till that day to accept, I think.
Yeah, there's something,
it's not just people who haven't paid fees. There's some larger admission structure
uh-huh.
that gives them through May 1.
Transfers?
Yeah, and so then there needs to be an orientation after that.
Got it.
All right, any other questions or comments for Sai?
One more thing relating to that. So for non-impacted majors, I agree, it's totally impossible to get them into the GEs they want, but you can still get them into the major courses if they're coming to a non-impacted major. So I agree that there's a massive problem with thinking for impacted majors, but if we do shut down the second line, then it is going to hurt that part too. So that's not a solution,
right.
It's just an extra layer.
Maybe if it's even just like a warning to students, in big flashing neon letters, especially for those who are in impacted majors, and we have more and more, you've got to get in here early or there's simply not going to be anything for you to do, because I'm at a loss.
So we're running out of time. We're going to have to set the agenda. We have a few reports left, potentially. So I'm just saying that all as context. So I did see that Matthew had
just a 15-second comment. I know when I was doing orientation, we were working on it. This was a problem we always had. We announced at orientation when they first came here, look, it's going to be tight, but what we're going to do is examine and see where you're pinging. And then we're going to try to open those up. So don't give up on us and really try to work. I totally get the hard spot where you're sitting there and the student's practically in tears. You're like, I'm sorry, I've looked everywhere.
Not just practically. They were in May.
So I know the provost is aware of that and the orientation team. So I'll make sure that he hears that.
All right. So unless anybody objects, how about I just keep working through the reports? If anybody wants to do them shorter, then great. So Elaine.
10 seconds. We have our statewide assembly meeting this coming weekend. I'll have more to report next week at the Senate. We should also be publishing our last paper in our Race to the Bottom series next week as well.
Any questions for CFA? Okay, thanks. Associated students.
Just 3 quick items. This week's agenda is solely dedicated to our budget. Last week, the Senate approved unanimously a resolution requesting the university to address the policy regarding administrator appointment committees. And I'll be bringing that. I will bring that on the agenda next week for FSAC as well, because their committee was the one that formulated the current policy. So we want to make sure we stay in communication with them. And then my final item is plan on having on May 8th is when the next Senate takes over, and expect them to approve my successor at that meeting, so we'll know on May 8th who will be sitting in this room next year.
Mm-hmm. Any questions or comments? So will this be your last time here, or will you come for that one?
I'll be here throughout the semester. Okay. Even if I'm not in the official position, I'll still be here because there's a lot of training that has to happen.
Well, I did want to make sure that you felt our gratitude for being here all this year. So. All right. So unless there's any questions for student for associate students, can we move to the SEC?
Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to defer to Paul's presentation, which is hopefully going to be at the next. Then the short version is they've got a lot going on. They were very pleased with their conference that they held, which was a week and a half ago now. You may have noticed the call's gone out for a new program called the University as a Living Laboratory, and they already actually have booked up all of the slots they had available. They got so many faculty applications that they're looking at possibly expanding that and including a few more. They're going great guns. So, and it's unfortunate we're not going to get the report on the STARS program and where it is at this point, because there's been a huge amount of student labor that's gone into that all this past year, and it's been really awesome. And they gave conference papers, and they are doing great stuff. So, in the fall.
All right, so questions for?
Not so much a question, but if you would take back, birthday was great.
Yeah, there we go. Yes. Happy Earth Day.
I enjoyed the stuff that they had. So.
Good.
All right, so I believe that was the end of our reports. So as we turn to the agenda, I'd like to take a minute before we do the actual agenda itself and talk about. Part of what we saw happen last week, and try to figure out, given that we're now going to be dealing with the discussion part of the discontinuance and the introduction of yet another discontinuance, and possibly one or two other touchy topics, there are a few things that I think we need to think about, maybe get some clarification, maybe some clarification on my part, too. Me getting clear on some things. I think I'm going to need next time to really... from the beginning of the meeting, say, people cannot speak without being recognized, because that started getting us into these accelerating things and or escalating things, and we needed that. Secondly, I was trying to keep to time certains and not have people talk over time certain, so it is appropriate for the person presiding on a meeting to interrupt somebody speaking at the time of a time certain so that we can ask whether we're going to extend. And so if I have to do that, I'm going to be doing that. But I need to have the support of people saying, if I'm interrupting, maybe I should just use the gavel or something. But there are times when we have to do that. Time certains don't close off a conversation. They just serve us to make sure that we know what we're doing or not doing and making that a choice. So if you can help me with that kind of stuff and really be signaling to me if you're willing to be on and help me get the others to do that, I think that would be helpful. And then I do think that we had a complication due to a transition mid-business item. When I came in for the initial, the first reading on the Candel discontinuance, because I saw a senator speaking and starting to ask questions, I had assumed that the presentation had already happened. And so we didn't actually get that. And so that explained to me after the fact why I could see Carlos getting frustrated for not having, because we hadn't done the classic, Melinda sets up, turn to the person introducing. We had a cascade because the backup had to fall back to another backup due to illnesses and
backup
whatnot.
To the backup.
And Armand was coming in and wasn't recently doing that.
Carlos.
So we didn't do that formal thing. And so I think we had a number of factors in there. But we are going to be managing some tense stuff. And I'm going to try and have us use Robert's rules to help with the flow, and so it's not seen as trying to cut people off, and so we'll be watching speakers lists and all that. That said, so as we think about the discontinuance here and the follow-up on the other discontinuance, maybe certain kinds of topics we should be thinking beyond just the 15 minutes. I know our bylaws say normally business items will be given 15 minutes on their first question. We may want to be revisiting that in the future, but in the meantime, let's just use those moves to extend. And secondly, I'm going to try and see if we can at all keep things like the Candel later in the meeting and try and get as many of the short first term, first time things ahead of them, so that if we do start extending, we don't have what happened last week, where a time certain for a first reading got bounced off the agenda entirely. And so because it was being opened up and because we were moving into discussion, discontinuances are important. So I did feel like, you know, I get why that happened, but let's try and not make it so that other things don't even get on the agenda in the semester, because now they're in the two-reading cycle. So with that said, is there any more comments coming from that, Elaine?
Yeah. Well, so I would just say respectfully that I don't know that you need to cut people off, like, just like, okay, stop talking. And I know you're in a tough situation, because I've been in that situation. But you can say to people, maybe when they begin talking, all right, you have 1 minute. And so people are aware that there's maybe a time limit, and then allow them to finish. If the time certain starts 30 seconds later, it's okay.
Or 10 minutes later.
Well,
that wasn't the issue. Well,
right, and in this case, actually, I had been trying to signal to Carlos. Yeah. He was really into his thing, and then we got hit with that. So I had tried without gambling.
I like to do it first.
But I do like the idea, and I will try to be clearer. I also think there might, I don't know if Sam's clock was actually the same as mine either, because when I said Carlos could go, I was going by my clock, and then when I was doing this.
Well, I think that's too, because I think you were taking up time trying to explain the time certains and saying, okay, we're getting near the end of the time certain, but I don't know, I mean, I think like when we are so limited on time, just, I mean, I know you're in a tough situation,
yeah.
So I get that,
yeah.
But maybe some of that could also be smoothed over.
Yeah.
So it's helpful to talk about the past only to the extent that it helps the future. And so I'm not sure that it really matters that much what happened last time. At some point, if somebody is going past what you told them, I think you have to interrupt. And I think that Elaine's point is right, but I think also we need to assume that if the chair interrupts, there is a good reason, and maybe talk to him about it later if it's not. However, I'd also like to say, do we need to try to put, I mean, I know our bylaws say first reading's 15, but I'm wondering whether we should put like 20 minutes, half an hour on for the first reading of the discontinuance. I mean, the Candel, it's open-ended, it's the second reading. But maybe we need to try to explicitly schedule more time and have a more formatted presentation. You know, we're going to give 10 minutes for this and then, you know, this. So that we can have that time for those. I don't know whether that's the right thing, but I felt everyone's frustration, and there wasn't really any way of honoring everything we were trying to do.
Just a little bit of institutional memory. The reason that the 15 minutes was proposed to put into bylaws was precisely because we were having extended first readings and not getting to anything else. It was an attempt to deal with the very problem that you are trying to deal with now. So I don't have any, you know, objection to extending the time, but I think making it clear, as you had tried to do, if you want to change the bylaws, fine, but as long as they say 15 minutes, I think we should just say we've got 15 minutes, and as you may have suggested, we will be limiting speakers to X number. However you deal with that, and say at the very beginning, if at the end of the 15 minutes the Senate wants to extend the time, that it's within the Senate's prerogative, and leave it at that.
And you know, one thing that might be helpful is if we are sensing that the Senate will need more. I think that's one of our roles as being on the executive committee. Maybe we could have a motion to extend the discussion beginning after our last time certain business is done, so that then it can keep going. Because if the others are in there, that way we can still honor them. Because we had part of what made last time so problematic is we had two visiting guests from out of town, and so there was a sort of symbolic ritual element in there that we could only crimp so much. And so I think if there had been other topics, then it would have been also. So it was a number of things, but maybe even that idea, could we come back to this topic after this next thing or after this next thing, and that way we wouldn't necessarily lose.
However, yes, it's there for a reason, and it is for this reason, and that is there, just so you know.
So the Candel discontinuance package is a beast.
Yes.
And there's going to be a lot of people at the next Senate meeting who do have legitimate questions,
right.
But there may be some, they'll be asking those questions, but a lot of them may be addressed in the packet.
Yes.
So I'm just sort of wondering what our thoughts on our, is it going to be considered rude to say it's in the packet, read the packet, rather than re-explain that component just because they haven't read that?
Yeah, well, as you heard me trying to do last time, it's a bit of an experiment to try and go in this mode, and I was looking around and noticing only a certain number of people had it. A couple of the questions actually pointed to exactly what were in the packet. And so do we accept the reality that they won't? Because they won't, and then we try and get the best decision with that. I also do think that even with that, we only gave them 2 days to look at a monster packet. Although, on the other hand, as Lynn's been reporting for weeks and weeks and weeks, that we had, the material was on there, and so maybe what we could do is try to be more explicit. A discontinuance is coming forward. Start getting ready. By the way, it's a 70-page document. It's on the Senate website. Please start looking at that now. It won't come to you in your packet, right?
Yeah.
Or the main part, so that people can start working through it. Because it would have cost us a huge amount of money to duplicate all that. So, yeah. Okay, so, we're running. Anybody mind if we go just a few more minutes?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have a 5 o'clock time, sir.
Okay. So,
bye, Sam.
So, Melinda, and then
But I think there are a lot of strategies for in the future making WLD discontinuances go more smoothly. Fortunately, the one that's on the agenda for next time for a first reading has a very small packet. But I think that maybe it might be worth sending out sort of a reminder to people that it's really important to make the best use of time. To make the best use of time, they need to be familiar with all of the documents in advance. If we could send out that reminder again, you know, about Candel, and then of course note that that's also the case with the additional discontinuance, even though that won't be an issue. So maybe a reminder is in order, and then it might be easier to cut people off and to, you know, change the course of the discussion if it's rehashing stuff that is clearly in the paperwork.
And let's try to send out that tomorrow, because they have materials, so let's
right.
get them looking at it.
Okay.
Okay.
Friendly reminder.
So I wanted to comment about the fact that the reality is the next time is the second reading. So we can't just say it's in the packet, go home and read it, because this is when we're actually making the decision. And so if they haven't read it already, you know, so there's that issue. And we do have a little bit more time, but that was what we were trying to say, you know, in the first reading, but it has that problem in the second. And we have to acknowledge the fact that there are some cases where we are just as bad as our students and we don't get the whole thing read. And so, you know, the question is, so I think we have to say, you know, to what extent are we going to come down and say, well, you should have read that before coming, and to what extent are we going to try and present stuff such that we acknowledge that not everybody's going to have time to do it, and so we're okay. I mean, obviously, we don't want to encourage everybody to come in completely unaware, but there has to be that balance, right?
I actually disagree.
Right?
I mean, I agree that, yes, we don't always read everything in its entirety, but I feel like if we want to be informed voters, if you will, we need to read the information.
Right.
And I think that if we don't, I don't think we have a right, like kind of to your point, to take up everyone's time asking redundant questions. Then we just need to sit back and be ignorant.
And maybe if those of us who are more familiar can say, it's on page 27, right? They can let us know. Okay, so with that discussion, because we are over,
yeah.
I really would like to get the agenda
kind of
here.
Was gonna suggest.
And then some of us can do more brainstorming afterwards, obviously. So if we look at the agenda, we've got the ECE certificate as a consent item. We have, as a business item, human development revision. And in fact, I'd rather not have reorganization on there because we're talking about the curricular revision. We're not really talking about the reorg.
It's not Senate business.
That's not our,
yeah.
not our business. Mm-hmm. And so let's have it just name that to help keep the focus on that. And I would like to have maybe, since it's, you know, there's a slim potential, whatever, with the consent item. I don't know, it's an online thing. I could imagine somebody saying, hey, wait a minute, we want to talk about it.
Right.
So let's make sure that the business right at the beginning can do a little bit of cushioning there. We see here that the candle is at the end, toward the end, but it's got a time certain of 4. And how
Carlos wanted it.
Carlos was wanting that.
Okay.
Could we maybe ask him if maybe even 4:15 works? Because if we can make that our last business item, then we can actually open it up as much as needed. And then maybe if those of us who might have committee reports might have quick writing up versions, if we don't get to you, we might be able to circulate those. That may be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else people see in here? Do some of the committees know that they're going to need a time certain?
What would you like to do about the end of year report? Yes. On paper, it doesn't look like this, right?
Yes, well, right. Well, let's talk with Richard on that to see. It sounded like PBS wanted to actually get a chance to talk. So maybe it could be the kind of thing that's held in the wings on the report, and if the time's there, it goes more. And if the time's not, then we take the move on. So we'd have to check with Deborah about whether she needs a time certain there. But is that all looking okay and good?
If I can just share something,
it should have been items.
No, I just wanted. I just found this out. I just checked my email. Anthony sent out a Susan Kashak email outlining the new voluntary statewide involvement representation fee. It's known as CERF. Pretty much the email includes a link of what it is and how to opt out of it if a student wishes. It's a $2 a semester fee, so it's just out there in case your students ask you what it is.
Go look at their email.
And I wanted to tell you, those of you who were in the meeting with Steven Stepanek, sent me the presentation, so I will be forwarding it on to you.
Here's what the CSU does for you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll look through it. I'm not sure. Yeah. There's some interesting things that I'll send
that.
It on so that you'll have it.
I
just got it before this meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.